Thank you. Be seated.
Although Justice Doggett and Justice Heck are absent, some of you may know why, they will be sitting in the deliberation and decisions of this case. Court is ready to hear oral argument from petitioner in Corpus Christi, People's Baptist Church versus Nueces County Appraisal District.
May it please the court, Mr. David C. Gibbs, Jr. will present argument for petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Your Honors, may it please the court, my name is David C. Gibbs, Jr. It's my privilege this morning to advance the argument on behalf of the People's Church of Corpus Christi, Texas. This is a case that involves a controversy existing between the Nueces Tax Authorities, their appraisal district, and a church located within their jurisdiction. It started with the matter of, does the church have to file in order to gain its tax-exempt status and alleviate from it the necessity to pay the requisite property taxes in that jurisdiction? As has been pointed out in the briefs supplied to the court, what happened here was that there was a change in the law. In 1980, with the change in the tax code, churches who had previous to that time filed an affidavit now were alleviated of any responsibility to file anything with the authorities. In 1982, again the law was changed. This change caught a number of churches unaware and off guard throughout the state of Texas. The change in 1982 now said not only did you not need an affidavit or to do nothing to be recognized as charitably exempt as a church, but now they had a procedure for filing an application. While the taxing authorities were apprised of this, many churches were not, including the People's Baptist Church. Taxes began to accrue. Under statute, every January 1, the taxes now became a lien against the property of that church. The taxes in question here are for the year 1986 to 1989. In 1990, the People's Baptist Church, finding out that these taxes were due, filed the application to be exempt. That application was received by the Nueces authorities and approved. There is no controversy that this is a church that is entitled to the religious exemption, nor is there any controversy that throughout the entire spectrum of its existence, it did everything that an independent New Testament Baptist church would do and should legally be entitled to exemption from the taxation laws. When the application was approved, the government then came in and said, but you have not filed for any retroactive release of the taxes, which would go back from 1986 until 1989. The church then filed that application. The legislature had already taken into account that there were churches all over the state having this difficulty, and they had passed a statute that allowed churches 6 years within which to get that application in so that they would be able to be alleviated under the very problem that we're before the court today. That statute, which was passed as the 6-year statute, has now been expanded by the legislature to be a 12-year statute so that churches innocently didn't find themselves, if you will, bereft or having their property exemption taken away, defeating the very purpose of the religious exemption for the state. The church filed under the statutory provision, allowing them timely within the 6 years to have the taxes for 86 to 1989 taken away. The authorities at that point came back and did not challenge what the church did. The authorities in Nueces County challenged what the legislature did. They said that statute that gives churches 6 years within which to file is unconstitutional. And what they said is that under Article 3, Section 55 of the state constitution for the state of Texas, it is illegal for that statute to give churches the 6 years, or now 12 years, within which to ask to have these taxes recognized as exempt. At the time that this was passed by the legislature, I'd also point out to the court that while we're here on the issue of churches and the religious exemption, they also passed identical laws for the homestead late filing, the schools late filing, and charitable organizations. All of these statewide ran into the identical problem. We are here suggesting that this statute does not violate the allowance of giving a church the right to claim an exempt status which is clearly in existence. We are not here saying that we gained this exempt status. What we're saying is we already possessed it. And it's uncontroverted throughout this entire time that this church had the proper status. It was just not recognized by the filing of the exemption.
During the period between 86 and 89, did the church receive notice that taxes were due enough?
Your Honor, what happened in that period, as I understand it, it's not in the record clearly, what happened in that period was that the church made inquiries concerning things and were basically told there was no requirement for a church to file, which was the status of the law from 1980 to 82.
My question is, did they receive notices that the property had been appraised and taxes were?
Yes. I believe that bills came, and that's why they inquired as to what the requirement was. All right.
And so what they, after 1980, they received their tax notice. They inquired, 1981, they received their tax notice, they inquired, and they said, you don't have to file anything, you're exempt, no problem. 1982, the legislature institutes a requirement of filing for the exemption, probably to help with bookkeeping on the local tax entities. The church, following the practice that it had been given no direct notice that there was now a filing requirement, continued as they had in 81 up through 82.
No, I don't believe, Your Honor, that they received anything in 81 or 82. It started after that period of time.
They were advised by the taxing authority that they had no filing requirement after the 1982 statute?
No, I believe what happened in that was they had some property that was owned by the ministry, the church, that was subject to taxation for which there was no controversy. They also then had property which would clearly fall within the religious exemption that was all the church property. They were led to understand that there was a confusion between those two, the ones that they were paying on and now this question. But what they clearly understood was that they didn't have to file that until such time as they got notice that these liens were on. That's why they walked in and then in 1990 filed that and then filed the late exemption. But this was not the only church caught in this. That's why the legislature took that action.
They received no notice of the liens until 90?
No, no. They came in 1990 and said, what does all of this mean? And see, what happened was the churches started receiving the nefarious notices of these taxes, some of them not for a period of years, because the taxing authorities were confused on whether to send the notices. In the case at bar, I have to confess, the record is unclear because the records were never preserved. And the county authorities don't have a record of which ones of those went. So we're sitting here a little bit saying, yes, the church did receive some notice, and they candidly admit that they remember some of that. The county can't admit, we think some were sent, but we don't know which ones. No question, in 1990, it all came to a head. And what the point before the court right now has drawn to such gravamen, the county is admitting, I believe, by stipulation, that if Article 3, Section 55, is constitutional, which we're not maintaining that it's not, and if the exemption...
If a part of the Constitution is constitutional?
No. Article 3 part, which involves the matter of the forgiveness of debt to the state, everyone's acknowledging that that's constitutional. But in light of that constitutional provision, we're raising the issue, the state is, the county is, can the forgiveness of that debt by requiring and allowing 6 years within which to file the application for exemption. does that violate that provision? We have maintained that it does not constitutionally violate the Constitution for the state of Texas. The Nueces County Tax Authority is turning around saying, while the legislature created us, while the legislature created this law, we're disputing whether that law can be held constitutional. And the church is asking this court to say clearly that what the legislature permitted in allowing these filing periods for 6 years, now 12 years, on behalf of churches, is constitutional under Article 3, Section 55.
How about Article 1, Section 16, that prohibits retroactive legislation?
Article 1, Section 16, Your Honor, on the matter of the retroactivity of laws that would impair a contract, we supported at the time of the trial court who ruled in favor of the church. When the trial court ruled in favor, that issue was addressed. What we maintain is this is not an impairment of a contract between the parties, because the contract itself is generated, if there is one, by the government's taxing authority through the legislature. And the legislature has said, we do not want to tax churches as a matter of public policy within the state of Texas, and we're giving them this period of time. Therefore, that constitutional provision is not an impairment, but rather the recognition of a public policy that's been advanced, literally immemorialized, throughout the history of the state of Texas.
Mr. Kitts, the taxes for 86, 87, 88, and 89 became due on January 1 of those years?
They become a lien on the property by statute as of that time. Now, how the statute scheme works is the lien attaches January the 1st by statute.
Is it not a debt against the property? Is it not a debt?
Well, it becomes a debt against the property, but outside of the six-year extension, how the statute works is that you then have until April the 1st within which to file for your exempt status as a church. Interestingly here, and I do not understand this inconsistency of logic, if they're against giving 6 years to the church, why would the Nueces authorities not be against giving 4 months to the church? They've never challenged that four-month provision. In fact, what they've said is that if the church had filed by April the 1st, even though the tax liability attaches as a lien as of January the 1st, it strikes me that if their logic were consistent, they would object to any time period after January the 1st. Instead, they've only said, we are objecting to the granting of the 6 years, but we're not objecting constitutionally to the granting of the 4 months.
The statute provides for the exemption. Does it state simply that these entities are exempt, or does it provide for an exemption which they may claim?
I believe what the statute provides in section 11.43, I take this back, in 11.20, that's the section that says religious organizations are exempt.
Are exempt.
Then in 11.43, which has to be read, I believe, in conjunction with that, they added the language for an application for exemption. So in one part, they clearly have this as a matter of right. But then addendum to that in 11.43, they put in the application for exemption requirement.
Application requirement was added in 1982. Is this the provision?
That's correct. Then they added...
why the legislature might find that desirable, so that these taxing entities know where their revenue is coming from and they know how much they can anticipate, how much they can get from budget purposes.
But we have no objections to that, Your Honor.
It's difficult to see how the exemption is provided for by law and exists, it can be the basis for such a liability.
Well, and that's exactly why we believe not only did they take 11.20, which is the exemption, then they added 11.43, which is the application, but then to further clarify with directive from the legislature, they added 11.433, which was where they made application for the late filing. And so what they've said is, while this is confusing because it wasn't required, and now it is required, we're going to give churches throughout the state of Texas and others in other sections, we're giving them 6 years within which to get this cleared up so that we just don't fundamentally catch churches off guard. That's what they have claimed by the Nueces authorities to be in violation of Article 3, Section 55. We cannot find in search anything on point exactly within the laws of the state of Texas.
What you're arguing, in essence, is that there can't be prohibition of retroactivity against the debt that never existed.
That's exactly correct. Exactly correct. And if it was a debt, Your Honor, which we maintain it is not clearly, we've pointed out all of the jurisdictions that have addressed this issue, the jurisdiction of Washington, Alabama, New Mexico, and there's a fourth one that we've listed there in our brief. Those that have treated this have said it is not, in fact, the debt.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, sir.
Court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Russell R. Graham will present argument for respondents.
May it please the court, I'm Russell Graham, firm of Salon Weinberger, Graham & Tanya. I'm here representing the taxing authorities. I want to clear up a couple of things about the history of this case, because I think it's been pretty well distorted up to this point. Let's talk first about the statutes on applications. There was a requirement before the tax code that churches, charitable institutions, any type of party wanting an exemption were required to apply. That requirement existed until 1980. By oversight, when the tax code was passed, because of the fact that it was passed in 79 but not fully implemented until 82, there was a two-year period, only a two-year period in the last 50 years, when churches did not have to apply. Another thing about this church being caught off guard, there's no stipulation to that effect, and there couldn't be, because this church has been in repeated litigation with the authorities in Nueces County. There is a reported case where the authorities denied the exemption and won against this very institution. This is not an institution that was caught off guard. There was litigation involving 1984 and 86, which was separate from the other litigation. The reason those years, I mean 1984 and 85, the reason they're not in here is the taxing units had already taken judgment on those years. And there additionally was a lawsuit filed before the statute became effective for the years remaining in dispute in this case. So don't be misled that this was an institution that was simply asleep at the switch, had never heard of an application requirement.
Mr. Graham, if the legislature can provide for a religious exemption and provide a time frame in which to claim it, why can't they enlarge it without violating this provision of the Constitution?
I think that is the basic issue in this case. The authorization for the exemption in the first place is found in Article 8, Section 2 of the Constitution. And it is permissive. It says the legislature, by general law, may exempt the following list of organizations. Let's say they have to. And it's certainly not a right that these organizations get that exemption. It is a privilege. And the legislature did, in fact, put in place a procedure under which qualifying organizations could apply and receive the exemption. So the legislature has done what it was authorized to do in Article 8, Section 2, but it cannot then come back later and extend that permissive authority that the legislature has under Article 8, Section 2 in a way which violates the prohibitive nature of Article 3, Section 55. Can't set up a system which goes back and eliminates existing debt.
I'll repeat my question to you that I've addressed to opposing counsel. If the statute provides for the exemption, that the exemption exists, and then subsequent provision that you have to file a claim for the exemption, but it doesn't affect the pre-existence of the exemption itself. It's not something you're entitled to, something you've got. That's the way the statute reads. And how can we say that you cannot retroactively extend the period for claiming the
an exemption that you've already got. It's not a debt that you've got. It's not a legitimate obligation. It is not a liability. It's a potential liability. But if you've got the exemption, and they extend a period of time for claiming, what's the problem? I understand the bookkeeping problems, but I don't understand the constitutional problems. And let me give you a second part of that same question. You alluded to other existing disputes between this particular church and the taxing authorities in Galatians County. Regardless of what happens here, the claims that the county may be asserting or that they may be defending against particular, the nature of particular property, whether it's taxable or not, won't be affected, will it?
No, Your Honor. In this case, the dispute as to what is taxable and what is qualified for the exemption was resolved when they applied in 1990. That application was reviewed for the 1990 year, and it was determined that a portion, only a portion of the church's property qualified for the exemption.
That's not the portion.
But what is the portion, Your Honor? Justice Gamage, is the fact that the statute must be read in its entirety. Article 8, Section 2 says the legislature may do this by general law. And what the courts of this state have said is when the legislature imposes an application requirement, that is part of the general law. And if someone does not meet that application requirement, they're not qualified for the exemption. The legislature can restrict the exemption to narrow it. It cannot broaden it beyond what's allowed in the Constitution, but it can restrict it, and it has done so by requiring application. And it's a requirement that is found on all exemptions. The church, like many others, only has to apply one time, and that exemption continues to carry over.
Mr. Graham, Mr. Gibbs raises the question that your party doesn't challenge the April filing deadline for a current exemption that comes 4 months after the January 1 attachment of the tax lien to the property. Do you agree that 4 month delay is constitutional?
I think it is a reasonable delay, and it is one that simply says you need to tell us within a brief period of time during the appraisal process what the status of your property is as of January 1, because all property is appraised as of January 1.
Okay, if it is permissible for the taxing authority to really view the April filing period as sort of a statute of limitations issue, we know the taxes have been assessed, we can go after it, but you have a limitation period in which to exercise a right to be exempted before we can come after you and collect the taxes. Why isn't the legislature free to determine we're going to give a 6-year statute of limitations to exercising the right of exemption? And so the taxes, until the 6-year period runs, there is not going to be the opportunity for a collection effort against the church. How does that rob you of a debt otherwise enforceable?
I think the point is that the April deadline, frankly, is one that relates to the practicality of administering the system. There are other deadlines in the code where the lien attachment becomes much more significant as time passes by. One of them is the parole has to be certified by July 25th. Once it's certified, it's turned over to each of the taxing units, who then, looking at their budget, determine what tax rate they have to fund that budget. And have to adopt their tax rate by September 1. They have to mail their tax statements by October 1. If they, and this is, I think, the key to the process, if they go in and adopt their budget, presuming to have a certain level of value on their tax roll, and 6 years later, somebody comes in and says, no, the revenue you expected for each of those 6 years is not available to you. You have done great damage to this, to the taxation system. This court understood that. In Edgewood 3, you allowed the continuing collection of what you declared to be an unconstitutional tax. And the reason was the impact of not allowing people or jurisdictions to collect the tax upon which they were depending would be devastating. But that's exactly what this statute does. There's another thing about this statute. It's only available to delinquent taxpayers. You have to have refused to do your civic duty for 6 years. People who have done their civic duty and paid the taxes levied on them are not entitled to any benefit under this statute. Only institutions which have refused to pay the taxes on bills which were, Justice Spector, sent each and every year, are entitled to any protection under this statute. I think what it comes down to is there is no perfect system where we can take a flashbulb picture on January 1 and have an appraisal roll prepared. There are a couple of 100,000 parcels in Nueces County. As a practical matter, there is no entity in this country that can prepare a roll instantaneously on the first of the year.
Mr. Graham, if we agree with you, wouldn't this same rationale apply to hold the late application for homestead exemptions or school exemptions or charitable organization exemptions unconstitutional as well?
It very well might. It very well might. I'm not going to deny that. And I have some problem with that concept, but that's the way our Constitution reads. And I think that's what's key to this case. Why do we have Article 3, Section 55 in the Constitution? A case which was cited to you not by us, but by an amicus brief filed by the Attorney General, is perhaps crucial to this discussion, and that case is Jones v. Williams. That case discusses in some detail why we have not only Article 3, Section 55, but the sections relating to other forgivenesses of debt. And it's a very significant case. Frankly, I didn't catch it because what it talked about was the extinguishment of penalties, not taxes. This was a case that arose because the legislature in 1931 tried to pass a statute relieving delinquent taxpayers in the heat of the Depression of the requirement to pay penalty and interest. In other words, if they paid their taxes by a certain date. The whole point being it was an attempt to get some taxes paid and to also reduce the burden to the extent possible. The issue of waiving taxes never came up. But what this court said in that case was that Article 3, Section 55 and several other similar provisions in the Constitution were put there because prior to the Constitution of 1876, the legislature of this state in the previous 4 years had passed 1,190 laws forgiving tax debts. The result, the state of Texas ended up in debt every year. They kept giving away their tax revenue. If you had a friend in the legislature, you got your money back. Well, the Constitutional Convention in 1876, as the AG says in its brief, went to overkill steps. They put in section after section after section to prevent the legislature from doing exactly what they did in this case, from giving away the revenues of this state and or its political subsidies.
You said it only applies to the delinquent taxpayers, so if a church has mistakenly paid taxes, are they entitled to a refund?
No.
No.
Only
those that did not.
That's correct. You have to, in effect, violated the law and not paid your taxes in order to get any benefit from the statute. I think the real problem is,
Mr. Graham, if you said earlier that, and I think in response to Justice Enoch's question, that the April 1st application for the exemption for taxes that come due or the lien attaches on January the 1st is a reasonable provision in light of the administrative requirements here. Does your argument here boil down to a contention that 6 years for the application for this exemption is unreasonable? Is that kind of the bottom line?
I think my bottom line is that maybe even the 4 months violates Article 3, Section 55, but I'm not going to argue that. Clearly, 6 years does.
Because it's unreasonable?
Because it extinguishes a lien which existed in favor of the tax lien.
So does the 4 month time period. I mean, under that, you have to agree with me, don't you, that 4 months is unconstitutional if the 6 years is unconstitutional?
I don't think this court would impose that standard on any governmental entity.
Would it? Doesn't it also extinguish a lien, however? Doesn't the 4 months extinguish a lien every bit as much as the 6 or 12 years do?
That's the basis for
finding objection.
I don't think it does. I do have a problem with it. And maybe the statute also says you have to file your application before January 1. It doesn't. But I think the real problem comes down to the fact that once you get to the point where the taxing bidders are relying on the existence of that lien, once their taxes have vested in that property, which occurs as the year goes through and they set their rate and they see the value.
By providing for this extension, isn't the legislature simply saying during this time frame there is no valid lien?
I don't think they can do that. And the reason is, and I come back to this,
they cannot limit the taxing authority.
I think that's exactly right with respect to that lien.
You can tax in these amounts, and you can institute liens, but they can't qualify themselves.
This is not a statutory lien, and I think that's one of the things this court needs to be aware of, because the petitioner keeps referring to it as a statutory lien. The lien is constitutional and self-enacted. It's in Article 8, Section 15. And I want to point out, title in our brief on page 19, we refer to it as Article 8, Section 1, but it's actually Article 8, Section 15. We've got several correct references. That is a constitutional provision that is self-enacted. There have been statutes clarifying exactly what happens. But it says, the annual assessment made upon landed property shall be a special lien thereon, and all property, both real and personal, belonging to any delinquent taxpayer shall be liable to seizure and sale for the payment of all taxes and penalties due by such a delinquent. That is it. Constitutional lien was one of the things done in 1876.
Here again, I'm engaging in semantics, but if there is an exemption, how can there be a valid lien if they claim that exemption any time within the period provided for by the legislature?
Because the exemption was available during the relevant time period, and they refused to apply for it. And the application requirement was part and parcel of the exemption. You didn't just have to have a qualified institution. You had to apply. And this court and other courts in this state have said that. You may be qualified, but if you refuse to file the application, you're out of luck. That's what the courts of this state have repeatedly said in exemption cases, that the application is part of the qualification process. And if you don't want to comply with that, you don't get the exemption. So,
Mr. Graham, the legislature that has the authority to grant the exemption, and we concede that the legislature can exempt.
Certainly.
Don't they also have the authority to say when that exemption shall vest?
They can. It is my position and that of my client that they can up to a point, but they cannot take that permissive authority and thereby violate another provision of the Constitution.
But are we saying the legislature can do something up until such time that we think that they should have done it or whatever? We're interposing our point of view as to when that exemption should vest.
I don't think, Justice Hightower, it is your point of view that we're talking about. It is the framers of the Constitution's point of view.
But the framers gave the legislature the authority to grant the exemption.
They gave them the permissive authority to grant exemption, which they in fact exercised during all the relevant years. There was a tool available.
Mr. Graham.
But then they gave them a prohibition against waiving an existing debt.
Mr. Graham, where in the Constitution do you find that the 4 month period of from January to April is okay according to your words, but 6 years or 12 years is not?
There have been holdings by the courts this day, and I can't give you a cite because I didn't realize this issue was going to come up. But there have been holdings by the courts this day saying that you can put an exemption in place, even a new exemption, grant a new percentage homestead exemption, for example, if you do so in an administratively practical time period during the year. Now, I think that's what's always been crucial to the court. Is it administratively feasible to deal with this during this time period?
Now, that would be ideal, but where do we find that in the Constitution?
Where do we find
the practical realities that you're talking about you said we put a gloss on the Constitution that requires for an orderly procedure in a short time frame to claim and apply for exemptions. But where do we find that in the Constitution?
Well, all I can tell you is the Constitution says that you shall assess the property as of January 1. All the four-month period is for somebody to reasonably tell us what was the status on January 1. And, you know, I can't really argue that point. Maybe the statute ought to say the exemption is prior, you apply prior to the first year, but that's not what it's ever said.
You earlier alluded to what the framers' intention was in passing this provision, and it sounded to me like you were, the argument really went to the, what they were interested in is limiting the legislature's authority to grant by special legislation exemptions, as opposed to provide for a general law which would allow for exemptions which we're dealing with here.
Well, I think the key provision is Article 3, Section 55. And what it says is the legislature shall have no power to relinquish, to release or extinguish, or to authorize the releasing or extinguishing in whole or in part indebtedness, liability, or obligation of any corporation or individual to this state, or to any county or defined subdivision thereof, or other municipal corporation therein, except the length of taxes which have been due for a period of at least 10 years.
But the argument is there's nothing to extinguish or release because the debt never existed. And your short answer to that is?
Our short answer to that is this property appeared on the roll. There was no application. There was no exemption because the application was part and parcel of the exemption. And the lien matured. The governing bodies depended upon the existence of that revenue. They budgeted. They sought to recover it through lawsuits filed before this statute became effective. And the legislature wiped it out.
As a record, it's like how many churches did in fact pay their taxes and did not?
No, it doesn't. But I think, look, if you really get down to it, where's the line drawn here? What about ag use? That's a special provision in the Constitution. If your land qualifies, it's available to you. Should we go back 12 years and let anybody who didn't qualify for ag use to come in and apply for it now after the fact? But only the ones who haven't paid their taxes all during that time? I mean, I think that's the biggest question.
It may not be good policy, perhaps, but you're questioning the authority of the legislature to do that.
I say that's why Article 3, Section 15 is there. It's why Article 1, Section 10, the retroactive laws, is there. And once again, I would cite you to Jones v. Williams. It's 45 Southwest 2nd, 130. And I think it tells you why those provisions are there and what they mean.
Did you say
the lien is filed and when can the taxes start to foreclose? Well, the lien attached to January 1, but the taxing authority has no authority to foreclose the lien until February 1 of the following year when it has matured.
So the 4 months would give someone not
certainly. In fact, as a practical matter, the time period is much longer because they might contest the denial of the appraisal district. That might end up in litigation going on for some period of time. But the lien doesn't fully mature and become enforceable until the taxes have been levied by the taxing units, the taxes have gone delinquent, and the taxing unit then has the right to foreclose that lien. And that might be the answer to your four-month question. The lien exists, but you have no right to foreclose it until you set your rate, the time period for payment of the taxes has expired, and then you can enforce your lien.
Any other questions? Thank you, Kevin.
Your Honors, the decision of Jones v. Williams in 1931, to which argument has been made, was indeed where there were a rash of people coming to the legislature trying to get their taxes and obligations extinguished. there were taxes not the subject of any exception, not the subjects of an exception. People simply came in and needed to have their tax bills taken away. And under that legislation, what they said was the Constitution forbids that. That's not the issue here. Here, clearly, we have the Texas Constitution authorizing the legislature to be able to give exemptions for property which is made the subject of a religious use. Uncontroverted, that's this case. The logic where he says we think it's reasonable to go to April the 1st, but unreasonable for the legislature to be able to extend. We respectfully submit that if the legislature has the power to grant a four-month window, it has the power to grant a six-year window, and that window has now been expanded, although not the subject of this lawsuit, it's been expanded to a 12-year window.
Mr. Gibbs, let me ask you this question. If the church did not apply for the exemption, and if there was no statute extending that four-month period, is there any question that the church would owe the taxes?
Not only would the church owe the taxes, the Nueces County taxing authorities would be in a position, if unpaid, where they could take the property away from the church.
Before the statute came into existence, in when? Was it 890? When did the statute give them a six-year opening?
If I'm not mistaken, Your Honor, I believe it was 1990.
If in 1989 the taxing authority had sued the church to collect on the taxes, is there any question that the taxing authority would have lost and had to have paid those taxes because no application had been on file for the exemption as required by the statute?
Well, I believe there are constitutional arguments which could be raised to call that in question. None of that would be raised within this statutory format, and indeed, the taxing authority would have the power to proceed.
Well, subject to the church winning on some sort of constitutional argument, statutorily having failed to meet the requisites for obtaining the exemption, the taxes would have been owed.
That's correct.
Now, why isn't a subsequent statute that's enacted by the legislature, which effectively waives retroactively the requirement to have filed applications, not extinguish an obligation that was otherwise owed, subject to your argument that the 1982 taxing code was unconstitutional to begin with?
Why it does not become an obligation, Your Honor, is because by the exception, the right for those taxes was not a debt. All that this window did was not then classify it the right way. It merely made an application to have recognized what was already an exemption. The property was exempt. There was no debt. But in order to perfect that exemption, the subsequent statute says, we now want you to proceed and file this application. That's not the relinquishment of the debt. The exemption already existed. All that the statute for 6 years did was give us the opportunity to have it recognized by application what was already in existence.
How then does the taxing authority come in, say, after a 12-year period and foreclose on that property? If there's an exemption,
I believe what the tax, excuse me, Your Honor.
Even though it's unclaimed.
I believe what the taxing authorities have done is they've said we cannot leave this open indefinitely forever. And so they have set a parameter which they feel is reasonable in the legislation to do that. Exactly. I want to thank the court for permitting me to appear for my teaching. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument in the final case for the day. The foregoing arguments are submitted on briefs and oral arguments. The marshal will now adjourn the court.
Scotty, please rise.